Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the three bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.
In the Green Scene today, the future of garden lighting, perhaps the plants themselves could be luminous. But first, a row in polo over gene-edited horses. We're joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Okay, where's the row?
Well, the row kind of is in Argentina, so it's a bit far from here, but it did sort of get me thinking about gene-edited domesticated animals, given that we're in the week of the ploughing. But the row has kicked off with the Argentinian Polo Association because five horses have been introduced to potentially play polo in Argentina, and they have had their genome edited. So first of all, they are cloned horses. They're clones of a champion polo pony. Mm-hmm. But scientists have edited the myostatin gene, which is a gene that inhibits muscle production. So these horses can be more muscly, and they have the right type of muscle to do that very fast movement that's needed in polo. So even though polo has kind of accepted things like cloning and surrogacy for a long time, this seems to be a bridge too far now for the Polo Association.
And they've said no.
They've said these horses cannot compete. But it's just very interesting because the technology that they're using is so specific that it really is kicking off a bit of a debate as to should we be saying a hard no to all of these technologies.
Now, what's the difference between gene editing and gene modification?
Well, I mean, actually, in the eyes of the European courts, nothing. They see them all as the same. But for many people, there is a difference. So GM that we would traditionally think of really changes large sections of the genome and sometimes even inserts genes.
You might have
and
a
chunks.
Spider's gene going
exactly,
into a cereal.
Think of it, you sort of have a long book and a chapter is taken out and a chapter of another book is put in. Whereas gene editing is so precise, it's really like someone has gone through a book and changed the odd word here or there, or maybe even corrected a spelling mistake.
So where have we seen gene editing being employed to help agriculture?
Yeah, well, we're not seeing it really being used widely yet, but there's actually a whole load of different technologies that have been developed that we could think about using. So first, if we think about cattle, I mean, one of the issues that cattle are facing is they're getting too warm. You know, they have these hairy coats, and as climate change impacts temperatures, they're getting too hot. So researchers in the US have been adapted to have a shorter coat. It's a bit slicker. It helps mm-hmm. them stay cool. That's great. They're less likely to get sick.
That would probably evolve in time, but it would take many generations.
Absolutely. And this has been approved now by the FDA in the US. The other thing that they've approved in the US is a genetically modified pig that was developed in the Roslin Institute in Scotland, where Dolly the cloned sheep came from. Uh-huh. And this sheep is resistant to a very devastating respiratory disease. So these piglets, as they're born, they're completely resistant. So those have both been approved by the FDA in the US now, those modifications.
Now, there are a couple of animal welfare stories in relation to this. Dehorning.
Yeah, so dairy cows are dehorned. Usually the little horn bud is removed before about 28 days, usually by cauterization. It's pretty painful. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're given an anaesthetic. But about 10 years ago, researchers found the gene for hornlessness in Angus beef cattle, and they've engineered dairy cattle to have this. So these cattle are born without horns. So again, it's a great example of where you sort of cut the problem off before it occurs. Dehorning is really important to protect farm workers and other animals, but wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to put little calves through that very painful process?
And what has CRISPR done for chickens?
Well, for chickens, I mean, people maybe don't want to know, but even if you don't eat meat, if you eat eggs, you know, all of the male chicks are killed. So around 330 million male chicks are killed at one day old in the EU alone every year. And that's because they're the wrong species for meat. So they've just gotten rid of.
Oh, you mean the egg laying chickens, if they turn out to be male, they're no good.
They're just killed. Yeah, they're just slaughtered at one day. Now, there are technologies like, you know, which you could sex an egg and get rid of the ones that are male, but it's very expensive. And some countries are now bringing in bans and saying you have to raise these for meat. But researchers back 3 years ago developed the Golda hen, and the male chromosome has kind of a kill switch built in, a genetic kill switch that they've edited in. And if you expose those eggs to blue light, they just don't develop at all. It's very cheap. It's almost no extra cost for the farmer. But at the moment, these kind of technologies are just not seen as acceptable in the food chain, even though in that case, the edited genome is gone. It doesn't go into the food chain at all.
Now, people worry if you have stuff that you've been eating for generations and it's never done any harm, then you change things. will it do us harm? That's the concern.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think with genetics, people have often operated the precautionary principle. You know, I don't see why I should do this. I don't see a huge benefit, actually. So why would I take the risk of changing anything? But I think as our world is changing, you know, that equation is shifting as well. So we might now have a different relationship with how we think about domesticated animals. We know much more about how sentient they are, you know, how they're possibly more like us than we think. So we have a different relationship with them. I think as well, climate change, you know, as we think about different diseases and, you know, different temperatures, if we want to actually farm productively, we don't have time to use traditional breeding techniques. So, I mean, you know, I think it's not for any one person to say we should or shouldn't do this, but I do think we should talk about
it. The ethical concerns, I mean, and also you don't really know what the implications might be. For example, if you make a crop unappetizing to an insect that used to feed on it, then that insect species dies out because they've no food. And then the whole food chain might be affected in some way we don't know.
Absolutely. And that area of modifying plants where their seeds spread, you know, potentially into the wild, on the wind, potentially for tens of miles, is a whole other area for discussion. But I think what this means, we kind of need to discuss each example on its own, because things that are true, for example, for modifying a plant crop may not be true for something like a domestic species like cattle, where breeding is very controlled.
Yeah, and of course, horticulturists for years have been hybridizing plants to give you this, that and the other. And the Labradoodle is a case of fairly elaborate messing about, if you like, with the species. Let's move on, though, to something that may or may not be harmless. Glow-in-the-dark plants, so I don't need garden lighting anymore.
Well, I wouldn't give up your garden lighting just yet. But this idea, people may have seen online pictures of plants that have a sort of faint glow.
Yeah.
And they were genetically engineered also using these kind of technologies by scientists at MIT, but they don't really give much light. So researchers in China have sort of taken a totally different tack. And they've taken a substance which is called strontium aluminate. And it's the same thing you get in your glow-in-the-dark watch face or those sticky stars you might stick in a kid's bedroom that absorb light and then sort of reflect it back with phosphorescence. And they've tried to engineer tiny nanoparticles of this that you can inject into a plant. Now, they failed many times, as scientists often do. The particles were too big to go through all the little vessels in the plants, or they got sort of patchy plant glowing. But eventually they used this kind of succulent, a rose-shaped succulent. Again, people might have seen them in garden centres. And they found they had the perfect size molecule to glow, and they coated it in something so the plant wouldn't be impacted. And they actually got pretty significant light out of these plants. So to the point they made a green wall, and they had 56 of these plants. And they said 10 centimetres from your eyes, you could read text or see a person.
So I mean, significant
you could see. And they glowed for about 2 hours when they had a few minutes of sunlight. So they charge up pretty quickly. So I don't know that we'll be seeing them in our gardens yet, but it's a really interesting idea about how we might have softer lighting in public spaces.
I'm just thinking of trees along a roadway. If they were all glowing, who needs a street lamp?
Well, I mean, we often light up those kind of things, but also we don't want such harsh lights at night either, because we know they have other impacts. So it's definitely not there yet, but it's an interesting idea for the future.
It won't be in your garden centre anytime soon by the looks of things. Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland, thank you very much for joining us.